as a practical matter, what this decision means is that gay and lesbians can now marry in Canada.
Just too excited for words, I think. Ear to ear grins.
If two people that are different genders can get married, why can't people who are the same genders get married?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Canadian couples get a ruling and another hearing in marriage cases, a Japanese trans woman and a Scots activist win political office, and pride parades in Belfast, Warsaw, and Zurich. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Ralph Radabaugh.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 3rd, 2003. The British Columbia Appeal Court this week ordered the Canadian government to open legal marriage to gay and lesbian couples. If the federal government fails to act by mid-2004, the court will redefine the current hetero-exclusive definition of marriage to read the lawful union of two persons. The appellate panel's ruling overturned a BC trial judge's finding 2 years ago that restricting legal marriage exclusively to heterosexual couples was a legally justifiable exception to equality guarantees of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. He therefore dismissed the lawsuit by 8 gay and lesbian couples who'd applied for marriage licenses. But the appellate decision said that the common law definition of marriage contravenes the charter and it cannot be justified in contemporary Canadian society. It went on to emphasize that attitudes towards same-gender relationships have changed, saying, "These developments have substantial public support, although the matter remains controversial. This evolution cannot be ignored. Civil marriage should adapt to contemporary notions of marriage as an institution in a society which recognizes the rights of homosexual persons to non-discriminatory treatment."
The BC appellate ruling is entirely in accord with last year's trial court decisions in Ontario and Quebec. The Canadian government has appealed both of those provincial judgments, but had justified doing so based partly on the disparity with the BC trial result. Federal Justice Minister Martin Cauchon admitted he must take into account the new unity in judicial opinion.
The Ontario Court of Appeal heard oral arguments on the marriage case there last week. The government argued that the charter doesn't apply to marriage, which its brief described as a unique opposite-sex bond that is a virtually universal norm that predates our legal framework through its long existence outside it. It went on to declare that the unique opposite-sex nature of marriage does not imply that the human dignity of those other relationships is diminished. But the brief for the 8 gay and lesbian couples who won the original Ontario trial called the government's arguments legally unsupportable, intellectually empty, and discriminatory. A ruling there is not expected for several months.
Surviving same-gender partners of deceased gay and lesbian civil servants in the state of South Australia will now enjoy their state pension benefits. The state's upper house gave voice vote approval this week to the private member's bill the lower house passed in September. The state government supported the move, but the bill sparked a flurry of protests from religious conservatives. All the other Australian states have opened their pension schemes to gay and lesbian survivors, but the federal government has not.
In the U.S., Texas State House this week voted overwhelmingly to refuse legal recognition that another state may extend to same-gender couples, whether it's Vermont's pioneering civil unions or as yet non-existent gay and lesbian marriages. After just a few minutes' consideration, the final vote was 118-9 to support the bill, sponsored by Republican representative from Pampa, Warren Chisholm, who reliably introduces a number of anti-gay measures every session. Previously, a Democratic majority had prevented this bill from reaching the House floor, but now the Republicans are in control there. The Texas Senate had already approved the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, and Republican Governor Rick Perry is expected to sign it into law.
There was also a ray of hope this week for gay and lesbian Texans, as House State Affairs Committee Chair Kenny Marchant, a Republican from Carleton, shelved the bill designed to prohibit gays and lesbians from serving as foster parents. Although the panel had held hearings on the bill, which continued several years of controversy on the issue, Marchant said it lacked enough support to pass.
The Minnesota State House much more narrowly voted this week to bar spousal benefits for state workers' same-gender partners in any future union contracts. The benefits had been a contentious issue this year after they were approved in union negotiations, only to be specifically excluded in the legislature's approval of the contract. The Republican majority in the House won the proactive ban for future contracts as an amendment to a major state spending reform bill, despite a lengthy filibuster by Minnesota's liberal DFL party, which controls the state Senate.
At the municipal level, though, the Covington, Kentucky City Council this week unanimously approved the addition of several categories, including sexual orientation, to the city's civil rights ordinance. That prohibits discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. The council vote came despite vigorous opposition from the Cincinnati, Ohio-based Citizens for Community Values, which included mailing to almost every household in Covington a 24-page booklet denouncing what it called the destructive homosexual lifestyle.
Japan has its first ever transgender elected official, as Aya Kamakawa this week won a seat on the Setagaya Ward Assembly in Tokyo. Although she ran as an independent, she was the sixth highest vote-getter of 72 candidates running for 52 seats. Kamakawa declared, "I will proudly attend the assembly as a woman." She's currently awaiting sex reassignment surgery, but even after it's completed, she won't be able to change her gender legally in Japan. Nonetheless, the Home Affairs Ministry instructed the Metropolitan Election Administration Commission to allow her candidacy as a woman in what may be Japan's first government approval of an official document referring to a gender not that registered at birth. Kamakawa, who chose to run primarily to raise consciousness of the humiliation and discrimination that result from documents showing birth gender, questions why it should even be necessary to list gender on candidacy application forms, especially since gender isn't shown on driver's licenses.
Also winning a seat this week was openly gay civil rights and AIDS activist Patrick Harvey, who will become a member of the Scottish Parliament for the Green Party. The Scottish elections increased the representation of parties smaller than the UK's Big Three, including the Greens advancing from one seat to seven, and the Scottish Socialists suddenly a presence with six new MSPs.
One of the losers in Scotland was Conservative Party candidate John Smart, who came in a weak third among vote-getters in the Edinburgh East and Musselburgh riding after declaring last week that pride marches should be outlawed because homosexuality is morally wrong. Scott's Tory leadership was quick to declare that Smart's opinion and not their party's, and in fact, the party's leader, David McGlechey, sent a message of support to Edinburgh's Pride March last year.
Edinburgh's 2002 Pride Festival was a financial disaster for its organizing group, but local gays and lesbians are trying to put together a parade this year.
In Northern Ireland, the Belfast City Council this week approved the use of City Hall for this year's Pride March, despite vocal opposition from the Conservative DUP.
In Israel, organizers of Pride in Jerusalem continue to struggle with their city over financial support. For the first ever Jerusalem Pride parade last year, the city provided some services but rejected a request for cash. The parade organizing group, JOH, the Jerusalem Open House Community Center, turned to the Israeli High Court, which ordered the city to disperse its so-called joint activities budget, funds used to support public events organized by groups other than the municipality, in a non-discriminatory manner. This week, the city grudgingly reached an agreement with JOH to fork over the equivalent of $8,500 towards the 2002 parade. But at the same time, the city declared its compliance with the court order did not mean it would fund JOH's application for funds for the second Jerusalem Pride parade, scheduled for mid-June.
Polish gays and lesbians marched for Pride this week for only the second time. Warsaw's Parade for Equality had almost 3,000 participants compared to just 200 last year.
In Switzerland, Zurich's march is still to come, but the fourth edition of the month-long Pride Festival called Warm May kicked off this week. It includes more than 70 events ranging from workshops, performances, and zoo tours to parties and international sports competitions.
And finally, if you're one of those men who suffer from womb envy, take heart. Research announced this week in the distinguished journal Science indicates that males can make eggs. An international team led by Hans Scholler and Karen Huebner of the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine, starting with cells from male mouse embryos, was able to develop both egg cells and the follicular cells that support their development in the ovaries. In culture, not only did the eggs appear to mature normally, a number of them spontaneously began to develop into embryos. The follicular cells aided the egg's development just as they do in the ovaries, including producing the female hormone estrogen. Scientists and bioethicists were quick to see that this could create someday a new kind of gay fatherhood, with one gay dad providing the sperm as usual and the other contributing his genes via so-called designer eggs. Ultimately, this line of research, as the Washington Post's Rick Weiss put it, could blur the biological line between fathers and mothers. But although the so-called sperm farming from female cells by a similar process is expected to be harder than creating male eggs, lesbians will still have an edge over gay men in their ability to actually carry an embryo to term. And researcher Scholler himself suggests that sperm farming could raise interesting questions about the biological relevance of males.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 3rd, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Ralph Radebaugh.
It's been an exciting year so far for Canada's same-gender couples. The federal government has held hearings across the country on recognition of lesbian and gay marriages, and the issue is becoming a hot one in the race for the leadership of Canada's ruling Liberal Party. According to an internal report distributed to House of Commons Liberal Party members responsible for the hearings, the government's suggested option of a national civil union registry for same-gender partners wouldn't settle the basic problems of equality and justice, which are at the heart of the matter. Eight queer couples went to the British Columbia Court of Appeal in February to contest a lower court's disappointing marriage ruling against them in 2001. On May 1st, the appeals court gave gay and lesbian advocates a reason to smile again. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching has more.
Bob and I met in a pub, funny enough, back east in Nova Scotia, and it was love at first sight in 1968, 35 years ago this July, and we've been together from that day, and we'll remain together until they either take us into nursing homes or into the graveyard. But we'd like to go in married.
Yeah. Lloyd Thornhill and his partner Bob Peacock are one step closer to having their wish granted. The British Columbia Court of Appeal handed down a decision on May 1st, ruling that Canada's bar to same-sex marriage is unconstitutional.
As a practical matter, what this decision means is that gay and lesbians can now marry in Canada, although their right to marry won't be allowed until July 2004.
Joe Arvey was the lawyer for five of the couples in the case. He spoke at a press conference on the day of the decision.
The only reason for the suspension, if you will, until July 2004 is to allow Parliament, the federal government, the provincial government to enact whatever sort of ancillary legislation or consequential legislation they need to give effect to the judgment.
I'm ecstatic. At the beginning, I think, when Lloyd said, "Oh, the judgment came down, we won," and I went, "Yeah?" You know, and I think it took a while to sink in, and it wasn't until we really got here and saw everybody that, wow, this is real.
Just too excited for words, I think.
Melinda Roy and her partner Tanya Chambers are another of the couples involved in the case.
Just ear-to-ear grins, and that's about the extent of it. So
Tanya and Melinda, Bob and Lloyd, are two of eight couples in British Columbia who are suing the Canadian government for the freedom to marry. Same-sex couples in Canada already enjoy most of the same benefits and obligations as married couples in the country, so the case hinges largely on the social significance of the institution of marriage itself. Opponents have argued that marriage is a uniquely heterosexual union and should be preserved as such out of respect for its cultural and religious significance. Queer couples, they say, could be offered a parallel regime, such as registered civil unions. Lawyers for the queer couples, however, asserted that separate but equal is not equal at all. and the court unanimously agreed.
The court rejected any suggestion that gay and lesbian couples be left with some second-class form of marriage. The court was unanimous in saying for there to be true equality in Canada, gay and lesbians are entitled to marry. This has been a very important development to ensure that they're not only entitled to spousal benefits or tax benefits or pension benefits, they're not only entitled to be free from discrimination, they are entitled to have their relationships as validated and as honored as any other as the relationships that opposite sex couples have.
The decision of the BC Court of Appeals is the third consecutive decision from a Canadian court affirming the right of same-sex couples to marry, and the BC Court is the highest level of court so far to make such a ruling. Federal Justice Minister Martin Cochon has 60 days to decide whether he wants to appeal the decision to the Supreme Court of Canada. But meanwhile, Lloyd and Bob are planning their wedding.
We're going to take it easy, you know, see how many gifts start arriving first before we make any bigger. You know, it's going to take a little planning, of course, because everyone we speak with or have spoken to want to come to our wedding.
You know, I would love to have the province to tell you the truth, you know, but practical, we have to look at it. It's not going to be quiet. That's for sure.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
The latest news out of British Columbia is that a group opposed to same-gender marriages is threatening to file a challenge to the Court of Appeals ruling with the Supreme Court of Canada. The Canadian Alliance for Social Justice and Family Values hopes their 6,000-signature petition can soon be presented before the House of Commons, which passed a resolution in 1999 restricting the definition of marriage to the union of one man and one woman. The group says it's prepared to carry the issue to the Supreme Court if the federal government does not.
Seeing is believing in the things you see. Loving is believing in the ones you love.
I'm Margie Adam, singer-songwriter. I want to say thanks for This Way Out. This magazine didn't exist in 1984 when I came off the road. And it's a thrill, now that I'm back performing again, to know that this show exists and is broadcasting lesbian and gay music and culture all over the world.
While same-gender couples in British Columbia celebrated their court victory, couples in Ontario were also celebrating. At the end of April, that province's Court of Appeal heard a case launched by the Canadian government after the Ontario Divisional Court ruled on July 12th of last year that marriage must be extended to same-gender couples. As Heather Kitching reports, the government seems to be losing the battles and the war.
Good night, my daughter. Sleep tight, my son. While the lawyers and the courts decide what is to be done. I wish that you could tell them all when they dare to question me that we're every bit the model of a perfect family.
It's not the pot that grows the flower. It's not the clock that slows the hour. The definition's plain for anyone to see. Love is all it takes to make a family.
It really hurts me to hear that they don't think people should get married just because they're the same gender. If two people that are different genders can get married, why can't people who are the same genders get married? Sure, they can't bear a child, but so what? That doesn't mean that they can't live and have a nice life together.
11-year-old Robbie Barnett Kemper sums up his reaction to the Ontario Court of Appeal hearing on the question of whether same-sex couples can marry. Robbie is the son of Allison Kemper and Joyce Barnett, one of eight Ontario couples who are suing the government for the freedom to tie the knot. In July of last year, the Ontario Superior Court ruled that they should have that right. But the federal government appealed, and from April 22nd to 25th, the case was argued once again at the appeal court.
Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married.
The Ontario case is unique because it involves two separate parties arguing two very different points of view. One set of couples is arguing that the marriage law violates the Canadian Constitution because it discriminates based on sexual orientation, and that there is no justification for continuing the discrimination. The other party in the case is the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto, who are advancing an argument based on Section 2A of Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That's the section that deals with freedom of religion. Lawyer Douglas Elliott is representing MCCT in the case and explains the position.
Our marriage law is based on the English marriage law, and the English marriage law is based on the canon law of the Church of England, because England has an established church. So, for example, the rules about incest are the Anglican rules of incest. So the fact that we have a rule that says that only opposite sex people can get married is because our law still reflects the Church of England's rules. And in fact, this is well demonstrated in Ontario's marriage law history, because when our first marriage statute was promulgated in 1793, only Church of England marriages were legally recognized. Gradually, the scope was expanded to Catholic marriages in 1847, to Jewish and other non-Christian marriages in 1857, and much, much later in 1950, finally, civil marriages outside of the religious context were finally recognized. So it was my position that this rule started off with a religious purpose, which was to discriminate against other religions and enforce Anglican rules against other people, and it still has a religious purpose and a discriminatory religious effect, even if marriage has been become more secular. As I said, the restriction remains religious in its origins, religious in its purpose, and religious in its discriminatory effect on churches like MCCT and on other religious groups like the liberal rabbis, who would like to offer same-sex marriage as part of their religious practice but can't.
The Canadian government is defending itself in court by arguing, for one thing, that the court should leave it up to Parliament to define marriage, because Parliament is in the best position to consider the vast array of public opinions on the subject. However, lawyers for the same-sex couples have pointed out that Parliament has only ever acted to give same-sex couples equality after the courts have ordered them to do so. The government is also arguing that although the marriage law does not include same-sex couples, it does not discriminate based on sexual orientation. Cynthia Peterson, a lawyer representing EGAL, Canada's national queer rights lobby group in the case, tried to expand on their position.
One of the things that they allege is that marriage has sort of historically, they say universally, although it was pointed out to them by one of the justices on the bench, that it's not universal, but they claim universally across all cultures and times, marriage has always been a heterosexual institution, and there's evidence in the record to the contrary, but they continue to insist that if it's not universal, it's virtually universal, and that marriage just is, in its essence, heterosexual. And so I guess the argument is, I've never fully understood it myself, but I suppose the argument is that lesbians and gays and bisexuals ought not to feel that our dignity is in any way demeaned, or we shouldn't feel offended by being excluded from marriage. It's just not an institution that describes our relationships. It's somehow, its essence is heterosexual. I don't know, Douglas, if you can put it any better than that.
I think the way she put it was that the government is not discriminating. It's the institution that simply, by definition, excludes us.
Right.
And it's not the law. The law did not create this institution. It's an institution that existed before the law came along. And so even the law doesn't discriminate, because it merely recognizes an institution that already existed.
Their arguments were were based on convenience at times.
Kevin Barassa, along with his partner Joe Varnell, is one of the litigants in the case.
And it was kind of funny to watch. We really, at times, felt sorry. Well, maybe not too sorry for the AGCs, because the lawyers for the Attorney General of Canada were really arguing a losing battle and really struggling to try to come up with some kind of logical argument against us.
According to Kevin, the religious interveners didn't fare much better than the government in trying to present a case against same-sex marriage.
David Brown tried to argue that this was something that Parliament or the courts didn't have a right to, in his words, impose on the rest of Canada, that marriage was constitutionally protected. It was very funny. One of the first laughs that came in court was when one of the justices on the bench named a number of constitutional experts and asked if any of those agreed with Mr. Brown's position, and of course none of them do, which Mr. Brown had to admit. But then, of course, he said, "You've left off my own name from that list of constitutional experts." So he cited himself as the sole expert in Canada that would agree with his own position.
The three-judge panel has reserved judgment in the case, and it's unknown when a decision will be handed down. But according to Kevin Barassa, that's just a technicality, because he's already sure of the outcome.
100% certain. That they will find unjustified discrimination, as we experienced in the divisional court, and very confident that they are going to address Section 2A in much more detail, if not also find a Section 2A violation.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
It's not the pot that grows the flower. It's not the clock that slows the hour. The definition's plain for anyone to see. Love is all it takes to make a family. The definition's plain for anyone to see. Love is all it takes to make a family.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Ralph Radabaugh, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, and Heather Kitching contributed program material. The Dixie Cups and Romanofsky and Phillips performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, U.S. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, KRUX Las Cruces, New Mexico, WMNF Tampa, Florida, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.